Forth, they had camped in Booth Bay Harbor. Not on the seacoast itself, of course, but they had found a farmer willing to rent them a hayfield in the Keniston Hill area for $20 a night. They had stayed only 3 days in the area. The summer season was still only getting underway, and pickings had apparently been slim. The farmer's name was Washburn. When Billy showed him the picture of Tadus Lemke, he nodded and blessed himself, quickly, and Billy was convinced of this, unconsciously.
"I never seen an old man move as fast as that one did, and I seen him lugging more wood stacked up than my sons could carry."
Washburn hesitated and added,
"I didn't like him. It wasn't just his nose. Hell, my own gramps had skin cancer, and before it carried him off, it had rotted a hole in his cheek the size of an ashtray. You could look right in there and see him chewing his food. Well, we didn't like that, but we still like Grandpa, if you see what I mean."
Billy nodded.
"But this guy, I didn't like him. I thought he looked like a bugger."
Billy thought to ask for a translation of that particular New Englandism, and then decided he didn't need one. Bugger, bugbear, boogeyman. The translation was in Farmer Washburn's eyes. "He is a bugger," Billy said, with great sincerity.
"I had made up my mind to send him down the road," he told Billy. $20 a night just for cleaning up some litter is a good piece of wages. But the wife was scared of them, and I was a little bit scared of them, too. So I went out there morning to give that Lemke guy the news before I could lose my nerve, and it was already on the roll. Relieved me quite a bit."
They headed north again.
They sure did. I stood right on top of the hill there," he pointed, "and watched them turn onto US-1. I watched them until they was out of sight, and I was some glad to see them go."
"Yes, I'll bet you were." Washburn cast a critical, rather worried eye on Billy.
"You want to come up to the house and have a glass of cold buttermilk, mister? You look peaked."
"Thank you, but I want to get up around the Owl's Head area before sundown if I can."
"Looking for him?"
"Yes."
"Well, if he find him, I hope he don't eat you up, mister, because he looked hungry to me."
Billy spoke to Washburn on the 21st, the first day of official summer, although the roads were already choked with tourists and he had to go all the way inland to Sheepscot before he was able to find a motel with a vacancy sign, and the gypsies had rolled out of Booth Bay Harbor on the morning of the 8th. 13 days behind now. He had had a bad 2 days then when it seemed like the gypsies had fallen off the edge of the world. They had not been seen in Owl's Head nor in Rockland, although both of them were prime summer tourist towns. Gas station attendants and waitresses looked at his pictures and shook their heads. Grimly battling an urge to vomit precious calories over the rail, he had never been much of a sailor, Billy rode the inter-island ferry from Owl's Head to Vinylhaven, but the gypsies had not been there either. On the evening of the 23rd, he called Kirk Pinchley, hoping for fresh information. And when Kirk came on the line, there was a funny double click just at the moment Kirk asked, "How are you, Billy boy? And where are you?" Billy hung up quickly, sweating. He had snagged the final unit in Rockland's Harborview Motel. He knew there probably wasn't another motel unit to be had between here and Bangor, and he suddenly decided he was going to move on, even if it meant he ended up spending the night sleeping in the car on some pasture road. That double click. He hadn't cared for that double click at all. You sometimes heard that sound when the wire was being tapped, or when traceback equipment was being used. "Heidi signed the papers on you, Billy."
"That's the stupidest goddamn thing I ever heard.
She signed them and Houston co-signed them.
Give me a fucking break."
"Get out of here, Billy." He left. Heidi, Houston, and the possible traceback equipment aside, it turned out to be the best thing that he could have done. As he was checking into the Bangor Ramada Inn that morning at 2 o'clock, he showed the desk clerk the pictures. It had become a habit by now, and the clerk nodded at once.
"Yeah, I took my girl over and got her fortune read," he said.
He picked up the photograph of Gina Lemke and rolled his eyes.
"She could really work it on out with that slingshot of hers, and she looked like she could work it on out in a few other ways, if you know what I mean."
He shook his hand as if flicking water from the tips of his fingers.
"My girl got one look at the way I was looking at her, and she dragged me out of there fast."
He laughed. A moment before, Billy had been so tired that bed was all he could think about. Now he was wide awake again, his stomach cramping with adrenaline. Where? Where were they? Or are they still...
Nah, they're not there anymore. Parsons is where they were, but they're gone all right. I was by there the other day.
Is it a farmer's place?
No, it's where Parsons' bargain barn used to be until it burned down last year.
He cast an uneasy eye at the way Billy's sweatshirt bagged on his body, at the blades of Billy's cheekbones and the skull-like contours of Billy's face, in which the eyes burned like candle flames.
You want to check in?
Billy found Parsons' bargain barn the following morning. It was a scorched, cinder-block shell in the middle of what seemed to be 9 acres of deserted parking lot. He walked slowly across the crumbling macadam, heels clicking. Here were beer cans and soda cans. Here was a rind of cheese with beetles crawling in it. Here was a single shiny ball bearing. "Hoi, Gina," a ghostly voice called in his head. Here were the dead skins of popped balloons, and here was the dead skins of 2 used Trojans, so similar to the balloons. Yes, they had been here. "I smell you, old man," Billy whispered to the empty hull of the bargain barn, and the empty spaces that had been windows seemed to stare back at the scrawny scarecrow man with sallow distaste. The place looked haunted, but Billy felt no fear. The anger was back on him. He wore it like a coat. Anger at Heidi, anger at Tadus Lemke, anger at so-called friends like Kirk Pinsley, who were supposed to be on his side, but who had turned against him. Had or would. It didn't matter. Even on his own, even at 130 pounds, there was enough of him left to catch up to the old gypsy man. And what would happen then? Well, they would see, wouldn't they? "I smell you, old man," Billy said again, and walked up to the side of the building. There was a realtor sign there. Billy took his notebook from his back pocket and jotted down the information on it. The realtor's name was Frank Quigley, but he insisted that Billy call him Biff. There were framed pictures of a high school-age Biff Quigley on the walls. In most of them, Biff was wearing a football helmet. On Biff's desk was a pile of bronzed dog turds. "Frenchman's driver's license," the little sign beneath read. Yes, Biff said, he had rented the place to the old gyp with Mr. Parsons' approval.
He figured it couldn't look any worse than it does right now, Biff Quigley said, and I guess he was right at that.
He leaned back in his swivel chair, his eyes crawling ceaselessly over Billy's face, measuring the gap between Billy's collar and Billy's neck, the way the front of Billy's shirt hung in folds like a flag on a still day. He laced his hands behind his head, rocked back.